Today's podcast is sponsored by Wix.com. If you need a website, why not do it yourself with Wix.com? You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. No matter what business you're in, like Debbie, who has many, they've got something for you. Wix.com is used by more than 75 million people throughout the world, empowering business owners to create their own professional websites. You can do it yourself, and you don't need one of those programmers or designers because they've got easy drag and drop features, hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and you could even add video to the background without any coding needed. You could get your website live today, and best of all, it's free. You can go to Wix.com, sign up for an entirely free account today without any credit card required. It's easy, and the result is stunning. So go to Wix.com today. That's W-I-X.com today. Enjoy the show. Coming to you live from my mom's basement, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the smartest player to never win rock, paper, scissors, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am on the road here in New York. We had our live know-it-alls this past Wednesday. The road trip continues as I am the best man in my sister-in-law's wedding on Friday. And then we have a christening for Anthony. A lot going on here on the New York trip. But we have still got a great podcast for you guys here today. Richard Hatch will be joining us to talk about the latest episode of Survivor. That's going to be a lot of fun. Always a thrill for me to talk with Richard about Survivor. That's coming up here today on the show. First off, a huge mea culpa on the Debbie exit interview. I was scheduled to record that on Thursday, and due to technical issues on my end, 100% my fault that I was unable to connect with the Skype call for Debbie during the window that I had, and I already rescheduled for later on in the day, and we just ran out of time where they were able to be able to contact Debbie on Thursday. So I screwed up. I missed my window. And so we are going to have that rescheduled for Tuesday, which is much later in the week than I want to do it. But I'm dying to talk to Debbie. So look for that coming up on Tuesday of next week. Of course, we had our big Survivor Know-It-Alls this past Wednesday night. If you missed that, definitely check out the audio and the video of that up on robhasawebsite.com. And if you also wanted to get your hands on some of the Know-It-Alls t-shirts that Brian Malloy designed just for the Know-It-Alls in New York for that event, you could check that out. Go to robhasawebsite.com/KIA5 shirt. robhasawebsite.com/KIA5 shirt to check out the shirts that Brian had designed and was selling over at the event the other night. And then we've got a great voicemail show coming up over the weekend. Saturday morning, I'm going to check in with Eric Stein from Big Brother, one of the great RHAP guests in terms of what we talk about with Big Brother. And we've done so many different movie casts, Billy Madison, Saved by the Bell, all the hits from Eric Stein. We're going to do the voicemails for this week's Survivor. And Eric was at the live know-it-alls, didn't get to talk to him as much as I would have liked that night, but I will definitely get to check in with him on Saturday and see if he has any good stories as we go through your voicemails on the voicemail podcast. So that's coming up on Saturday. Make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe to the podcast. Go to robsawebsite.com/iTunes or search for Rob as a Podcast, RHAP, in your favorite podcatcher. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today. He's one of the greatest people that you could possibly hope to have on a podcast talking about any of this Survivor strategy. He is the original Survivor winner and one of the great all-time RHAP guests. Welcome back, Richard Hatch.
Rob, I don't get it.
The best. The best.
Am I the best or am I not?
Yes.
I need to know.
Yes.
Yeah. You having to be politically correct is fun.
All right. Well, Rich, always a pleasure. How's everything going?
It's going great. Life is good, and always happy to be on Rob Has a Podcast. always fun. And this episode really kind of brung it. So we have plenty to talk about, I think.
Yeah. Rich, are you very sad to see Debbie leaving your TV screen?
You know, I didn't sleep last night for all the crying I did. The truth is, she's really an interesting character for me.
Yeah.
Because I just watched her kind of in awe of what she seemed to be believing. And that was fun.
You know, a lot of people felt like that she was kind of a throwback in terms of casting. Did you feel that way? Do you feel like that she's somebody that would have been at home in the first couple of seasons? Or is she maybe even too big of a character?
Well, I think that's one way of putting it, too big of a character. So I feel like she's at home now. And I feel like she'd have been at home then. And I feel like she'd have been at home on Mars. you know, she would just be at home. That's Debbie, buddy. It seems to me, you know, watching her kind of live in the idea that what she saw and what she believed and what she thought about it and how it was going to happen really unfolded when I noticed that she had no sense, it didn't seem to me, of the impact of her confidence on others. Mm-hmm. And that's just in this game. It's a tragic, tragic flaw. And in season 32, there's just no excuse.
Yeah. She was somebody who came into the merge and she said that she was going to play offense while everybody else is playing defense. Do you feel like, is that ever the right move on Survivor to really go on offense?
I think playing offense on Survivor is essential. Absolutely, absolutely, utterly essential. But how you do it is the issue, it seems, most of we humans who get on that show, often after years of desperately wanting to get on and studying the game, completely lose sight of how to do. Mm-hmm. Playing offense in Survivor is not being a brash, overconfident, emotional, excited individual. It's craftily and cautiously being flexible and maneuvering through whatever it is that unfolds without offending people, without affecting them, hopefully, too strongly one way or the other. And that's just something people just don't seem to get. Debbie, for instance, really, really felt free to kind of be herself and tell everybody about it and work hard to be in charge. Although she started out, I thought, or at least it appeared that way, by just telling the camera, us, the viewers, which I liked. But then I realized it wasn't just a camera. She was doing that in front of everyone.
Yeah, she did seem to be getting more and more confident as the game went along, and she felt like better and better, even though her position was sort of weakening in the post-merge. She started to get definitely some confidence about her. How do you keep that in check, Rich? Because you were somebody that made confidence work for you.
Yeah, and it was weakening. Did you notice it weakening in her? Do you think she noticed it weakening?
I mean, I think she had to at the Nick vote. I think she had to have known that maybe when Neil went out and it was a medevac and they didn't vote, but I think she had to have known that they were on the ropes there with that Nick vote.
Okay, well, that was what was amazing me. I kept thinking she isn't even noticing this. This is crazy. So how did I... it's about... going in, as you know, look at me, I'm telling you, you going in and keeping your cards close to your vest while engaging people. So you can't be perceived as having an idea of where you're going and being kind of clear about what you want done. Mm-hmm. But you can be that inside. You kind of have to. So I don't know. I think it's just an awareness of maybe I'm making it too simple. Maybe it's something that many people can't do.
Yeah.
Because in real life, I'm actually probably far too open. Mm-hmm. I think of it as a good trait. I like to let people know what I think, what I'm thinking about in general, what I'm thinking about them, what I'm thinking about life, kind of at all times. It makes engagement meaningful and fun. But on Survivor, you can't do that. And ironically, I'm perceived as someone very different from whom I am based on what people see on Survivor, because I was able to keep it in check.
So let's talk about the big move that was made the other night, or at least all of these different dynamics which happened.
Which one?
Yeah, there's so many different things to talk about. And Steven and I were debating this the other night, and there's been a lot of debate online, and nobody really, I think, has a good handle on whether this was a really, was this a shrewd move on the part of the women, or what did the women make a huge mistake this week? So I guess let's just take it from Aubrey, who I think is the person that maybe might have had the most to say about this decision, because she wanted to vote off Julia, and then Julia ultimately won immunity, and then she had to make a new decision on which way to go, and she decides to stick with the women and take out Debbie, because that will bring Julia back into the fold. What did you think about this, to end up taking out one of her own allies who happened to be somebody who was a real squeaky wheel?
So you're going to have to help me with this, because I find Aubrey fascinatingly bright and awake.
Yes.
And I think, wow, watch this woman play. She's playing in a way that I appreciate immensely, because she's sharing her play with us, with the viewers, to the camera. Love that. So you get a real insight into her thoughts, her strategies, etc. Yet, as she focused on Julia, I thought, that's a misstep. And I'm still thinking, isn't that a misstep? Where I feel like she could have somehow used Julia's having gone with the boys, and maybe she did and we didn't see it, I don't know, to kind of have Julia participate with her in something. Mm-hmm. And instead, she was just all out after her. And I thought, there has to be a better way. Even though the idols were all kind of screwed up, and Ty was talking about there being a super idol and things like that at the end, still, I thought Aubrey could have better planned how to get rid of somebody other than the people who were part of her alliance.
Yeah. So do you have a suggestion on what she should have done? Because I think that this is one of the more complicated votes that we've had in the last couple of years.
I couldn't agree with you more. And Debbie's going turns out, in my mind, to be probably the best thing that could have happened situation wise. However, here we go. If Aubrey were as bright as I'm thinking she is, or I've been perceiving her to be, I would have expected her to be more aware of who Ty seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
Ty seems to be someone with whom I would have had a long talk and done everything I could to influence him to make some powerful moves then. So, for example, if she had gone to Ty and could have pursued either of the other power players, Kyle or Scott, power players. I mean, don't get me wrong when I say that. I mean,
people with idols.
There you go. And
people with access to the idol.
And brashness and out there and moving and, you know, clear targets. We'll get to them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Particularly Scott. I mean, targets that don't have a chance of winning. And I'll talk about why. But Ty has cracks in his armor. Ty is well liked and all of that, and he's got to go because he could get votes. But he's not playing as well as I would have wanted him to. He's mm-hmm. too vulnerable emotionally. Too unclear about what he has to do. You see spurts of it when he's willing to, you know, in anger and then put out the water. but it's not a consistent, clear, comfortable role he's playing. He's wrestling with himself. And were I in Aubrey's shoes, I would have exploited that.
In what way? Do you feel like you would have recruited him to somehow vote against the guys?
Yes, and I would have taken steps to do that all the way. I don't know that it could happen all in one instance. I doubt it could, because I think Ty is a little brighter than that. But Ty has made a number of slips talking about what's there. I would have talked to him about idols, whether I knew he had one or not. I would have talked to him about his role, his place among those other people who think they're better than him, stronger, you know, more in charge. I would have talked with him about what survivor looks like when somebody makes the most bold, unpredictable moves possible. And I would have set him up, and actually he's in a position to have that happen now. I can only hope something like this unfolds, where he is kind of a linchpin, and he switches. They gave him that other idol at Tribal. If somebody with brains could convince him to not use it when they think he's going to use it and get rid of one of those, big mouths, bullies.
Yeah.
Wow. Wouldn't that be a great survivor move?
Yeah, that would be very exciting. Yeah, I wonder if that his Achilles heel might be sort of just like appealing to him and talking about like, Ty, is this really how you want to be seen? Do you want to be seen as somebody? Because he seems to struggle with the morality of the, I shouldn't be sabotaging them. And eventually he does give into the peer pressure of doing it, but it does feel like that you could sort of talk him off the ledge and back to, you know, being the lovable good guy, Ty.
Exactly, Rob. And when you say struggle with morality, in season 32, how sick are you of watching people struggle with morality in the game? I mean, wow, it just makes me a little bit nuts. Yet, I've got to say, there are a lot more people who are playing, who are not struggling so much with morality and really getting into the rules of the game and playing the game full on. So it is interesting to watch somebody struggle among other players who are playing. And that's why I'm saying Aubrey should be bright enough, or somebody should be bright enough, to exploit Ty's struggle.
Do you feel like then it is smart to avoid the super idols, or do you feel like that this was maybe her one shot to be able to defuse it in trying to keep everybody together? And even if Sydney is the person who ends up going home in that spot, it's still worth it.
So I don't think that was her one shot. I don't think she's missed it. I think she still could recruit Ty.
If she could free Ty up then.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's got to happen boldly, and it's got to happen more quickly than it might have been easier earlier. And it's got to happen against, let's say, you know, Scott. Mm-hmm. Other people are much more easily controlled. Scott's a loose cannon who clearly just gets angry, and you can't. You simply can't have that around you. You can have that around you so long as you have clear numbers against him, but he's just too likely to do anything that could be dangerous, and he's going to have to go because other people can be influenced. Kyle, I don't think, can be influenced either, so he's another tough cookie.
Yeah. So let's talk about the guys and their decision to, after Nick guys voted out, they say, okay, well, we're going to be the saboteurs of the camp. We're going to create chaos and make it really uncomfortable for everybody to hide the axe and the machete. Do you think that that is an effective and legit strategy in the game? Because I think that you've always been pretty clear about there's, you know, there's very few rules in the game. So I don't know if you have any sort of moral hang up on it, but do you think as a game move, is that an effective idea?
Absolutely ineffective. I have no moral hang ups on it. Let's be clear. None whatsoever. But it could not have been more stupid to walk over and pour water on the fire. Would I put out the fire? Hell yes, I'd put out the fire. Would I hide food, do whatever? Sure. Tied in the middle of the night. We'll see how this unfolds, putting out the fire. So long as no one knows he did it. Even his supposed alliance, Scott and Kyle, because they're dangerous, should not know that he put out that fire.
Yeah.
Unless Ty knows that they're going very, very soon, and it wouldn't matter if they know. then they could respect him for having done that and gotten rid of him. Are you following?
Yeah, I am following.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, there, you know, by now, there's no limit to the way I think the game should be played, as long as it's about the game and not a personal outside the game abuse of somebody or attack. So put out the fire, undermine people to other people, do all of those things that would be awful in real life. But you should expect them to be done in this game. And yeah, they're not being done well. Scott pouring the water on the fire is a, you know, season one or two mistake. I mean, a real bad player's. I'll even go so far as to play kind of a Russell mistake.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. In your face, look at me. I'll put all doubt out of your mind. I'm a moron. It was right. Me. You know, that's how I feel about it.
You know, going back to season one, back in Borneo, there was a point, and maybe I don't have the timeline right, but I believe it was after you got three or four votes at a tribal council, and where I think it might have been the vote where Jenna Lewis went home, and you were not happy about it. And you said, you know what? I'm not going to fish now. I'm not going to provide. For now, I want them to be hungry. I want them to appreciate me. Is this in some ways sort of like different branches of the same tree?
So let's be really clear about how that's similar and different. This is a real, what a great, God, I love how much you know this game. What a great example. So absolutely, I would withhold food, like I was suggesting, you know, not fish, get them hungry, make them start to appreciate that there is someone who can bring them fish. But did I tell them that? No, I told viewers that. I didn't go and stand there in front of people and go, you're not eating and you're not eating and you're going to really love me because I'm the fish getter. You know, hell, all that does is set people up for animosity to get rid of you, and if not get rid of you, have you be the perfect person for someone else to bring to final tribal, because you'll never get the votes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Russell all over it, and it's clear evidence of not understanding the game of Survivor, I think.
Yeah, and I thought that one of the things that Aubrey identified, which was particularly smart, was the reason why they were doing that was not necessarily because that they were complete poor sports, which might have been sort of like an added bonus that, you know, they were salty about what had happened with Nick and the vote that went against them. But they wanted them to vote their way so that they could use the idols. So by sort of acting out in that way, I felt like that Aubrey was right. They want us to vote for Scott so that we know clearly what to do. Put all our votes on Scott so that they can use the hidden immunity idols. And I know that Aubrey was smart to say, well, let's not do what they want us to do in this round. And it just worked out where they weren't able to pull off the plan that would have taken away the vote that was preventing them from doing the split vote on them, which was Julia.
Now, there's the flaw. Aubrey was right. They were trying to get people to do what they wanted. But here's the wackiness, I think. They should have done almost what they want. The rest of the people should have done what those two goons wanted. Because those two goons should not have wanted people to vote. They shouldn't have. If you can have the idol and use it to your benefit without wasting it.
Mm-hmm.
Then do it. But to get people, just because they don't know there's an idol, that they were almost so giddily immature about having this idol and the superpower, super idol possibility, that they were going to just do it now. Oh, do it now because we'll be seen as great. You know,
right.
What the hell? I mean, I think it's just stupid to have done it so uncautiously. So with such little respect for how powerful that power, having one idol, never mind two, the super idol, would increase over time.
Yeah.
It would be powerful then, but it just gets more and more and more powerful the less you use it. So I thought, and you can tell me what you think, just silly for them to try to force the idle hand then. It's not desperate. They didn't need to get rid of, you know, somebody in particular. They would have had it there in their pocket if they needed it anyway without telling anybody. So I don't know. I think it's an uncautious move.
So you feel like that they should have at first attempted to get the numbers back on their side, you know, in traditional methods with a social game and all sorts of making relationships and sort of, and then keep the idol as a last resort as opposed to plan A for this round of play.
Right. This is dangerous when people talk about traditional methods as if they're different from the methods being used now. So, yes, whatever methods, use untraditional methods, use traditional methods, build relationship, make it a short relationship, fake. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. The key is flexibility. And unfortunately, I don't think they have it. They're too committed. I think it's ego. I'm not sure too ruled by this. You're not going to do that to me. I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
Dumb mentality. Instead of thinking more carefully about what could be done first, instead of skipping steps that waste their power.
Do you see any difference between Jason and Scott, or do you sort of paint them with the same brush?
Oh, geez. I do see difference. It seems to me like Jason is more thoughtful, not thoughtful enough, mm-hmm. perhaps not craftily detached enough, a little too much bravado, but far less than Scott, who is, it appears at least as a viewer, way too much in people's faces. And what Scott has to overcome is not just his position in real life, his position in sports, but his size, his physical presence. So he's a bigger than life guy because of who he is and because of his size. And that really matters. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thought of as something different from who I am, I've learned over the years, because I'm 6'4" and I'm an imposing figure. And I have to take that into account. Reality matters. That's my phrase of life now.
Yeah.
So the title of my book, Truth Matters, Reality Matters. And the reality is Scott's more imposing than Jason. So Scott should take that into account, and he doesn't at all. He's just playing like a bumbling ogre, I think. And Jason's a little more capable of keeping that in check, I think. So he talks to the viewers well. He lets us know what he's doing. But there are times, and he's in an alliance with people that are making him look kind of even more bullish than he might be.
I think it's a good pair, though, for the two of them, especially for Jason, because if they get to the end together, whether it's final two, final three, I think that if Jason and Scott have a very similar resume, I do think that it's better for Jason to be able to say, you know, I did the same things that Scott did, but I'm like you. I'm not an athlete. I'm not, you know, 6'11" or 7 feet tall. And I do think that he would have the leg up on against Scott in any sort of final situation. So for Jason, I don't think it makes any sense for him to get away from Scott in any way.
Well, I disagree. I think it makes some sense for him to get away from Scott, or at least to build better. What's that word when you have a tunnel under a castle?
And a moat.
No, not around it. Under it.
So under
that nobody, under the castle that nobody knows about, so you can escape through that. Escape routes.
Yeah.
So if he should build better escape routes and yeah, okay.
No, you know, you're right.
Hang with them now, but he should have more. So here's the key. I think if Ty, I'm not, oh boy, do I like Ty personally on yes. so many levels for so many reasons because of who he is, but Ty's not smart enough in this game, I don't think, to be playing as well as he should. And I think that's the key to this Scott and Jason relationship. If Kyle were smarter, he would be better connecting with Ty and holding him in. If Ty is smart enough, he'll align with someone else outside of the Jason Scott thing, and Jason and Scott will be gone. They won't be at the final together. They shouldn't be. They're too brash. They're too much of a target. They should be removed, let's say, by Ty and Aubrey and Sydney or something. Because Sydney's, you know, she's got some good things going on there, too. But maybe a little bit of that. I don't know. She's at least talking as if she's too twitchy. But we'll see. She hasn't let it go yet.
That's a good point all around, because when I went back and I watched Heroes versus Villains, you know, I felt like that maybe if Parvati at some point says, you know what, I'm going to get rid of Russell. I'm going to throw Russell overboard. Mm-hmm. When she sits at the end, then people say, you know what, that Parvati wasn't just in cahoots with Russell the whole time. She got rid of Russell. We hate Russell. And so Parvati should win the game there. And so
That kind of play is key.
Yeah.
That kind of play is required now to win. You've got to show that you understand the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could, one of them could throw the other guy overboard and really make him the scapegoat of, like, it wasn't me, it was Jason, or it wasn't me, it was Scott. I think that that would earn a lot of favor with the jury.
This is why it's so tiring for me to hear people talk about traditional play and old school versus new school and all this other stuff. If you're a good player, you're a good player. I think Jeff might even have talked about not thinking I would do well now or something like that. It's fascinating to me how few people understand the game of Survivor. If you understand how to play it, it doesn't matter if it's old school or new school. You're going to be adaptable and flexible, and you're going to think of exactly those things you just described about Parvati. Her getting rid of Russell, her craftily undermining him and poof, gone. I mean, that's something you can proudly share at Tribal that would deserve the respect it likely would earn you in those votes.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this. I'm glad you brought up, you know, how somebody like yourself would fare in the modern game, because I do think that a big important part, I think that the numbers have gotten more complicated and the voting scenarios have gotten more complicated. But I still think the game is, if it's not 90%, I feel like it's somewhere around there, still about the social relationships. And the numbers thing, I think, is, you know, important, but not nearly as important as the relationship building.
I agree. But I just don't think it's as simple as saying it's one or the other. The game skills required in day one, on season one, are the same game skills required now. Is it more complicated? Sure, but you still have to have those skills of awareness, adaptability, this extreme capacity for flexibility over time, and an awareness in that flexibility of what's happening, how you're impacting everyone, and how each of them is impacting one another, etc. Whichever approach you take, whether you're building a couple of relationships, whether you're not, and you're going week by week, you know, hanging on by the skin of your teeth because you're a target, doesn't matter so much as your capacity to evaluate what's happening and adapt and interact with people in an influential way. Some would say manipulative. that makes sense. That brings you success. You know, for example, Joe, you know, he's just not there.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a lack of understanding of the game. Maybe it's compassion, these real life qualities that he might have. But he's too kind of about who's nice and who's not, and kind of too connected. Like he went with the girls. You know, he said, Jeff asked him, who are you going to support in this last challenge? And he said, I'll go with the girls. Well, that's stupid. You're in an alliance with the girls. You know, it's so much more likely that the guys would have won that challenge. You know, you back the guys, you get your food, and you're still in your alliance with your food.
Right.
He's worried about what it looks like or who I say I support. Da, da, da. That's not the gameplay that you need to win this game.
Well, could you compare Joe with Rudy, who, you know, they're about the same age? I think that Rudy was 72 when he played with you in Borneo, and here's Joe around that same age here in this season. Do you see any similarities?
I see many, many similarities. However, here's what I'm going to do talk about with respect to age. I don't think it's the age that's the crucial part about what makes Joe similar to Rudy. It's their lack of craftiness and understanding what's needed to make the game theirs, to mm-hmm. own it. There's a conflation of the qualities that make a good person with the qualities that make a good survivor player that's problematic. They just shouldn't do that. And you can't do that if you expect to win. Rudy did it. Rudy's awesome, fun. He's great. He's just a good guy.
The best.
He conflated that good guy thing with being a good player.
Yeah.
That's what Joe's doing. Oh, I got to be a good guy. No, you don't.
Well, I think that they have a lot of similarities in terms of like, okay, this is my group. These are the people that I'm loyal to. And, you know, that's it. I'm not changing my vote. And I think that Rudy would probably in a pretty similar, if you took, you know, the 2000 Rudy and dropped him off in Survivor 32, I think it would probably be similar with the exception that Rudy, you know, had this great win.
Who's that good for?
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah. It's good for you. Right?
That's good for me.
Right.
I made Rudy part of my alliance the day I met him. We hadn't even spoken. He thought alliances were unethical. He was a member of our alliance for weeks before I could convince him that the ethics weren't an issue, because I could see that in him and I would see it in Joe and I would exploit it heartily. But it's good for me. It's not good for Joe. It's not good for Rudy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yes, they're similar, but that's not good gameplay.
So the thing about a guy like that who has some of these similar Rudy qualities, how do you think he reacts now in this next episode after the women went behind his back and did this? They asked him if he wanted to be in. He said, no, don't do it. They did it anyway. So how do you think he reacts? Do you think that he just moves forward with the women, or do you think he thinks about joining up with the guys?
Joe will not join up with the guys.
Okay.
How's that for...
What does he do then? He just goes back with the women still and say, like, you know, you really shouldn't have done that.
I kind of feel he won't feel as if they undermined him. I kind of feel as if Joe will somehow see that it was needed and it really didn't harm him and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Because to be fair, he didn't really seem that mad with Aubrey when she ended up flipping her vote to vote a different. When he said, hey, vote with Peter, she crossed the vote out, voted Peter out. And then, you know, he didn't seem thrilled, but he was still working with Aubrey after that.
Right. And so I don't want to confuse people. I talk about how emotions have to stay out of the game. I wouldn't want to see him get mad. That would be stupid. That would be outside the game. It'd be dumb. I would want him to talk about how it could make him mad. Oh, how dare she? Oh, now let's get her. Da, da, da. But I don't think there's enough awareness there.
Yeah, we'll see where he goes. But ultimately, he really has been so lost in the shuffle these last couple of weeks. I mean, he's really a non-factor.
Well, yes and no. And that's the caution. That's where I caution you and viewers. These people who are as reliable as Joe, Rudy, and we can give a whole list of them. They're not really common, but there are more than that. They're gems. They're wonderful for a good player. They're not wonderful for themselves.
Yeah, because you know where they're going.
Yeah. If you know where somebody stands, and this is a hard thing. Like, say I play again, I would be one of those to some extent too. Because you would know if you were with me that I'm with you for as long as that's helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would need a smart player to realize they need to align with me too, because I'm a damn smart player. And I would need to know from them that they're with me for as long as it's good for them. And it's only after that we then you know, go at each other. But what happens is people are too stupid. This was in All Stars. That's what happened.
Yeah.
To recognize that they need good players for a while. And it's like, oh, get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him, because I'm scared. If you're scared, you're not a good player. You need to get further in the game and hang on to the people who know how to play. It makes for a better show. It makes for a better chance at winning for all involved. So it's, here's my pitch.
Okay.
To you people who are looking and playing. You know, you need to align with me. We need to be allies for a while. Don't, it's not just, I'm not just talking about trying to stay in the game. You're an idiot if you get rid of people who play too well too early.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, well, you're preaching to the choir.
Well, I don't know. That's you. You got a big audience, and I'm not so sure they understand it as well as you do.
Okay. Well, I hear you, Rich. I'm not getting rid of you.
All right.
That's one person. Okay.
I mean, not too early. Clearly, you're going to want to. You know, you probably don't want to be sitting next to me at the end, but you don't want to get rid of me, you know, before a merge, for sure.
Right.
And after that, I still would say you want to keep, if I could keep you, if I could keep Poverty, if I could keep Sandra, you know, for past the merge for a while, I mean, I would.
Yeah. Well, I like this idea of keeping all the big targets around. That's what's good to me. But then I say to myself, like, well, is that just ego? Is that just because you're trying to make, you know, you want it to be a good TV show? Are you getting caught up in that?
No. It's not, I don't think. I actually don't care if it's a good TV show if I'm on there. All I care about is winning. And another good player should, all they should care about as well is winning. And the best way for either of us or any of us, because it could be more than two, to win is to be aligned with great players for a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this getting rid of them too early is stupid because that leaves you sitting among too many unpredictable players.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a really great player who's not unpredictable, who's going to play well, who's going to know that getting to the end as a team is best, then you're at risk of somebody's whim, somebody's stupid kind of, I'm going to pour water on the fire and be, you know,
yeah.
It's just dumb. There's a lot of dumb in Survivor.
So you want to say, let's vote out the dumb. It's like, let's get rid of the unpredictable element.
Correct. For a good,
take the pawns off the board.
For a good stretch of the show, that's what should happen.
Yeah. Rich, I've thought about this many times over the years. And just to be clear, like I was talking about how in my own head, I'm saying, oh, you're just trying to, you know, you're getting too cute with, oh, making good TV. I wasn't accusing you of that. But it's definitely a fascinating idea. You know, you tried to see how many people could you get on board with it.
Well, I don't think you could get too many because there aren't too many good players, frankly.
Yeah, but everybody thinks they're a good player.
Yeah, but I don't care about that. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Good players. You're a good player. You know who gets the game. I know who gets the game. You know, Russell thinks he gets the game and thinks he's a good player. Oh,
yeah.
You know, come on. It's just not true. So would it matter, you know, keeping him long term or even for a stretch? No. You know, he's unpredictable and it's not smart to do that.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we can work all this out another time. let's go back to Sydney because we haven't talked about her that much. But I feel like that I'm really struggling for anybody who's saying that Sydney didn't make a good move this week. Because if Sydney doesn't make the move that she makes, she's the one who's going home.
Yeah, she could be. There are moves that have to be made now. And there are a number of people who could be going home. I mean, sure, Debbie's gone and that was unpredictable. But look, there are two idols that we know of and those together are a super idol. They're supposedly in Ty's pocket. So this leaves so many possibilities. This leaves the next steps so unclear and so varied as far as possibility that it's really, really difficult to predict. I wouldn't say that Sydney should be the one to go.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a waste. You know, I would keep her. I would.
If you were who? If you were the women or if you were the guys?
I would, no matter who I was. If I were the guys, I'd try to bring her on board. If I were the women, I'd try to keep her. I think she's a good player. I think it's still, I think players, decent players, are still necessary to keep around because there's too much unpredictability with the idols right now.
Yeah.
So, especially with the Super Idol, that's just such a new thing. You need good players. You can't sit there and count on, you know, Scott or well, I don't know who, but, you know, Julia's showing she's making some moves that are in her best interest. And she's young as she is, sounds open to talking rationally with other people. I don't know. I would love to see Aubrey and Sydney come together and talk to Ty.
Yeah.
Change things up in a way that makes sense for this game and for them as individuals, and then move forward.
You know, just going back to last week's vote, we talked a lot about whether or not it was too soon for Sydney to make her move. And we talked about, well, is she going to stick with the women or is she going to, you know, she just wanted to get rid of Nick and she's going to go back with the guys. But I was very surprised this week. We didn't really see any sort of conversation after the vote between Sydney and Jason and Scott, who she was aligned with beforehand. Who do you think that's worse for? That, do you feel like it should have been Jason and Scott saying, like, hey, Sydney, can we talk about that last vote? I really want to understand why you did that. Or should she have said to them, hey, you know, just because I voted against you, I still maybe want to work with you guys down the road.
She can still say that. But look, here's perfect example of Scott and Jason plodding ogrely along like bullies instead of playing the game. Whether they felt it or not, they could say that with Sydney. They could keep that kind of thing happening between them, that potential camaraderie thing there. That's not the game they're playing. You know, there are people who so Jason and Scott aren't Peter.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Peter is one of those people, like, can't you imagine Lynn Spillman making selections and going, oh, people will love how stupid this idiot is.
Is that how she talks?
Oh, I can just imagine it.
I can't imagine her saying something like that, Rich.
I can't imagine her saying something like that either. But inside, in her head, she was just probably shaking with giddiness at what a douchebag, dumb player Peter was. So clearly cocky, thought he was the cat's meow. I think they thought that about me, but then they learned how stupid they were.
Yeah.
at not reading people. But Peter's pretty, I don't know. He seemed pretty obvious to me.
Was Lynn there from the beginning? Was she on board with you guys in that first season?
She selected me.
Wow. Wow, so good for her. Wow.
Yeah, Lynn Spillman is it.
30,
yeah, she made the selection.
32 and still going.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
So clearly, by now, even if she did think I was too cocky and it would be fun to watch me go first, that's what they said they thought.
Yeah.
I don't know if she was one of those or not, or if maybe in her back of her head she thought, hey, maybe I think he might have something to stay long. Who knows? Peter didn't. And I think she could have seen that then. And what I'm saying is, although Jason and Scott aren't as obviously playing badly as Peter by any stretch, they aren't playing as well as they should be, because you call it old school or whatever, that relationship game that they could be playing with Sydney, that they could be playing with others in general, just by not being so ogre-ish, is lost to them.
Right.
It's not available to them. It's available to Ty. It's available to Aubrey. It's available to Sydney, who I've got to give credit for being nicely on that edge so far. She's exhibited those kind of strengths where, you know, piss me off and I could go off kind of thing. But she hasn't gone off in an offensive way to people. She hasn't been so rude that it's caused these players who aren't so smart to dislike her so much they don't care about how she could help them in the game.
Well, for the guys, they lost Sydney and they lost Nick, but it looks as though that they felt like they replaced Sydney with Julia this week, who they recruited to come over to her side. So now, Rich, you were giving Julia compliments a minute or two ago. So do you feel like that she has played herself into a position where she could potentially win the game? Long pause.
I hate to say no because it's you know, it's sad to me that someone that is playing kind of okay, but I don't think she's done it in a way that is setting herself up to be respected by the jurors. And the reason I say that is because old school, new school, these terminology, whatever, she's, you still have to build sincere kind of relationships with people. They have to see a part of you that's sincere about the game you're playing. And so if she's shifted the way she has and didn't exploit her having gone to the guys to get the food in a way that helped her remain somewhat sincerely connected to the others, that's poor gameplay.
Yeah. Do you think she just comes off as wishy-washy to the people that are still there?
I think she comes off as too young and too unpredictable.
Yeah.
Instead of reliable. And there are reasons she did that, but really she is still with us. The only one who was saying that was Debbie. And that was stupid of Debbie, because Debbie had no basis for saying that. It was just hopefulness, and hopefulness outside of rationality is just a waste of energy.
Do you think it made sense for her to vote against Debbie? Because I wonder if that maybe she sees an opening, or she could have seen an opening where, don't you love that scenario for her where she's sitting in the final three potentially with Jason and Scott if it's a final three?
Oh, God.
Like, couldn't she be a modern day Natalie White and be the person sitting next to a pair of Russells?
So, yeah, if she's sitting next to Jason and Scott, but see, I have difficulty even having the conversation with you about sitting in the final three with Jason and Scott. If Jason and Scott are in the final three, what does that say about the others who are playing this game?
Well, I mean, you could certainly imagine the scenario with the super idol in hand and with Ty, and potentially if they could get Julia back, so down to eight, that's four people in a group of eight. You know, you certainly could see
it. I see it. Yeah. I imagine it.
But I'm scaring you?
No, all it says is you know, what that says to me is Ty is stupid.
Yeah.
I hate that. I hate the thought that somebody in season 32 would be stupid enough to let these two obviously bullish players to get to the end. I'm not even calling them bullies like bullies outside in the real world. I'm talking about their gameplay. Maybe they're really good people. I have no idea. My point is their game choices would cause a good player to eliminate them now. You know, not wait for them to unpredictably get rid of me, you know, if I were Ty, or me if I were, or anybody else.
Yeah.
So I'm not condemning either of them. If they get to the end, like I've said a million times in talking to you, they deserve it. You know, if they get there, they deserve it. Even if I say their play was not as good as it could have been.
Yeah. But maybe does Ty see, like, okay, well, these guys are kind of, they have bad reputations. If I'm sitting there next to these guys, I'll definitely win. This is a good look for me to sit next to them.
Will he? Or does he look to everybody else that's there too wishy-washy, and they look too credibly in charge? Mm-hmm. If they look credibly in charge and that they brought Ty along based on his, you know, floundering, then he doesn't have that he shouldn't have the confidence that he could beat them in the finale. We've seen it too often in the finale when people sit there and apologize for the things that they did. Neither Jason or Scott are going to apologize for a damn thing.
Right.
And that'll help them in the finale.
Yeah. That would be interesting, because I don't know how many pro tie votes there are. I don't feel like that there's too many people, at least certainly from what I've heard from Debbie. I don't think that she was the biggest tie fan. So I don't know how much they're going to love tie like a lot of the viewers love tie in terms of the jury.
I agree. And I think that's Ty's fault. Ty had, I don't know if you remember, but from the first time we've ever talked, I've talked with you often about knowing yourself before you start the game, not trying to figure it out in the midst of the game.
Yes.
So Ty is still trying to figure out what he's willing or not willing to do.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, in angst half the time about whether this will harm somebody or whether it's okay or whether I could be around it or whether I can participate. And holy crap, buddy, wrong time. You know, do that before you sign on to Survivor. And I think that leaves him, sadly, out of the respect game at the end. Other players aren't going to see the confidence and intention required to earn their votes.
Rich, does it annoy you that Ty has kept the chicken as a pet?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I love it on a personal level. I love it. I loved that the chicken was sitting on his shoulder. I just thought that was phenomenal. And that I love that. Is that something to be cautious about and could be exploited by somebody else in the game? Sure. But so far it hasn't been.
What do you mean exploited? Like somebody should like kidnap the chicken and then tell Ty, if you don't vote with us, the chicken gets it.
Exactly. I'm going to slit its throat. Here it is.
Wow.
Give me the idol or the chicken goes. I mean, Ty is so uncertain about what he's willing or not willing to do that I would use that in a heartbeat. I would take a knife to that chicken's throat right in front of him.
Oh, my God.
Holding it there until he gave me the idol. And I think he would give me the idol. And I would happily put the chicken back on his shoulder. I wouldn't want to kill it.
Well, is that against the rules? Can you do that?
Why would that be against the rules?
I don't know. It seems a bit extreme, but I think that...
Oh, Rob!
I think Jason's going to be mad he didn't think of this first.
Extreme? Go for it. If it's not personal attacks, etc., go for it. You know, I'd eat the chicken. I'd bite its head off. The hell with the thing. I'd do whatever it took with respect to those kinds of things to win this game. People just don't know.
Wow. Well, you got off easy in the first season, winning without even having to bite a live chicken's head off.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if I got off easy, but I didn't have to expose all the tools in my toolbox. Let's put it
right.
That.
I guess you did bludgeon that shark, right?
I chewed it
second time, right?
Out.
Yeah,
on a rock, and that was a good lunch. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, the other person that we haven't talked about at all so far is Michelle. And she's been sort of a polarizing person because, you know, we had a bunch of the other survivors have mentioned that maybe they haven't been super impressed with her. Other people who are watching the edit super closely feel like, oh, she's a really good bet to win the whole season. What's been your take on her?
Michelle.
Yes. So I know which camp you're in.
Wait, I'm actually trying to think. Oh, my gosh. Let me think of some of the things that she's been doing.
Yes.
I'll tell you one thing that I thought was extraordinary.
Okay.
When she was at camp and Ding Dong was pouring the water out of the fire.
Yes.
Her composure was extraordinary.
Okay.
It was rare. It was unique. It seemed clearly an indication that the woman could play, that her priorities were great. She said specifically, this isn't stuff I would tolerate in my real life, this kind of behavior. I'm with her. I wouldn't have that in my life either. And I wouldn't want to tolerate it in the game. And I thought, boy, that's so well articulated. So I think
she has poise.
Yeah. And I think that's important. I think that's absolutely clear evidence of this thing I keep talking about, this skill of awareness. You have to be aware enough to have that kind of thing in the game. So, you know, I don't know. She's one of those people, you know, I kept using as an example, Aubrey and Sydney should join and go with Ty. If this next week should show us really where are the smarts, because, you know, Michelle could bond with, or bond. Michelle could align with, could bring in somebody else too and pursue Ty. I think Ty is a critical figure. And I don't know if Michelle has the capacity to do that, but it'd be interesting to see her try.
Do you see her as a pair with Julia? Because I really feel like that she could go in almost any direction. I feel like if Julia falls back in with Jason and Scott, she could go in that direction. She also seems to be closer with the Sydney and Aubrey pair, and she could go in with them. So I do feel like that she's somebody who is not even being talked about as a target and has some options about which way she could go.
So just the fact that you're pointing that out, just the simple fact that you're saying she could go to the left, she could go to the right with these two, says something about her. If that's intentional, she's got a real shot here.
Yeah.
If this is just haphazard and she's not put herself in the position of being a potential ally of either of those groups, then we don't know. But I get the sense that her reservedness is intentional, and I like it.
Okay, good. All right, so you are higher on her than I initially thought.
Yeah. My hesitancy, my waiting, my trying to think of specifics in answering wasn't about negativity toward her. It was about how do I word it? How do I articulate where I feel like she is when I'm not really sure right now?
All right. So then do you have a person that you are predicting that is going to win the season?
That's a tough thing. It's always a really tough thing for me to do. And I feel like it's a disservice to the game for mm-hmm. me to say, I predict such and such, because there is so much that could go on. And the more Lynn puts good players in the game, the less sense it makes to predict. So if Michelle is playing with intention, that puts her, Aubrey clearly is playing with intention. Jason and Scott are clearly playing with intention, if not overdoing it some. Ty, maybe not so much. Julia's playing with intention. Sydney's certainly playing with it. I don't know. So these people who are playing with intention could at any point, after we saw the fireman who won?
Jeremy.
Yeah. After we saw the luck that he had so many times after goofing and still coming back because he go, oh, let me get back on track. Oh, let me get back on track. Oh, I screwed it. Oh, let me get back on track. Anybody playing with intention should never give up. So that's a wordy ass kind of unclear way of saying I hate to predict. I don't think Jason or Scott should be able to take home the prize, but that's only because they've been so bold. And I don't know if they know something that I don't know, if they're seeing in the midst of it that their boldness doesn't matter because the others just aren't capable of combating it anyway. So if that's the case, then I would say for Jason, good on you. But Scott's just unnecessarily arrogant, I think.
Okay. I want to get into some of these questions that I have for you from the listeners. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This is from Andrew Gauchy, who says, if you or someone in your alliance had the idol, how would you use it? Did you feel like that those guys did a good job protecting their alliance of three with the idols the other night?
So no, I don't think they did a good job. I don't think it was necessary for them to be so haughty. I think the idea of exposing it so dramatically and making certain that everyone knew not just what they had, but how powerful it was not just unnecessary, potentially really, really wasteful of power that's valuable the longer the game goes on.
So what would you be doing with it?
I would make every effort to ensure that it was known to only the fewest number, if nobody other than me, great, or the fewest number of people needed to know that the idol was there or what power it held in this super idol kind of scenario. So I would not have, there was no need, I don't think, to be so egotistical about it in the in the tribal council.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, did it buy them anything to tell everybody, hey, we have the idols? Because
if it did, I'm not sure what it did.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I think it I think it did the opposite. It's done what Scott and Jason have been doing that's unnecessary for a little while now, and that's that bully-y thing. And if you engender a kind of disdain from the people who are going to be deciding who they respect most, you're not playing the game well. The game is to win. The game is to get the $1 million check. The game is to earn votes. It's not just to get rid of people and be at the end. That's so Russell.
Right. If anything, what they did before they went to tribal council in terms of any sort of buzz about the idol, they were already voting for Debbie by the time they went to tribal council. Nobody was changing up their vote based on the rock, paper, scissors. I'm going to hand the idol to Ty. I'm going to either use it on me or Scott. So all that stuff was really window dressing. Nobody really cared.
Exactly. And wasted afterward. It was, you know, were that something that needed to happen? Was Debbie not to be the target? Great. But this was done. This was tied up and, you know, you get it.
Now, this was a question that I had asked Steven during the show the other night, but do you feel like that the super idol is too powerful? Because in reading the comments in the discussion about that question, you know, people have said, you know, everybody with the super idol that you could play after the votes has made it to the final three. Do you think that it's too powerful to have an idol that you could play after the votes are read?
Look, it's powerful. That's the point. Would it suck for somebody else to have it if I didn't? Sure. But it's the game. You know, that's that flexibility thing. Everybody's kind of faced with the same chance of having found it, of having used it, of knowing what to do when it's there. And the truth is, powerful as the super idol is, there are still all kinds of options that, from my perspective, aren't being exploited right now. Nobody is, well, we'll see next week. People should have been all along trying to infiltrate Ty's kindnesses and connect with him in a particular way that, ooh, look, he was just given the super idol. So they should now have him in their pockets, try to help him see how smart, and it would be smart, it would be of him to move away from Jason and Scott to go to the end. That would be such a powerful move that he could point out at the finale for respect that he needs, as opposed to this wishy-washy willow in the wind kind of
bamboo in the wind.
Yeah, there you go, bamboo.
Thomas Forsey wants to know, did you receive any antibiotics or other medical attention after your shark bite during the All-Stars? Now, we had so many people get these infections and have to be taken out of the game. Was that something that was even going through your mind at the point that the shark bit you in the All-Stars?
Oh, it was through my mind. Everything goes through my mind. But it was just the opposite. I wanted medical nowhere near me. Because remember, that's still, even though it was All-Star season 8, it's still so early in the game. We had people who didn't know how to play in seasons now, 30. So I wanted them to stay the hell away from me. I was loving how it was oozing and clotting and dripping down my arm. So it was all red and bumpy and yellowy pussy. And I thought, look, I don't have long. I need to leave it there so it can fester a little until I get to the beach and people can really feel appreciative of what I go through to get the food. So no, they wanted to come and I refused. Get away from me now.
But were you worried that something was going to happen? And did you get any treatment ultimately? Because when did that happen? What, probably around like day like 7 or something like that?
I can't remember what day, but no, I didn't get any treatment. I can't even tell you the number of injuries, cuts, things that have happened to me under the water or whatever. And salt water is, I have a really great immune system. I'm a really healthy guy. And salt water is an incredible healer. You need some kind of dryness afterwards, but I know how to take care of it without antibiotics and all the rest of that. I wasn't worried in the least.
Okay. Daphna Andrews wants to know, how did Jason and Scott compare to other Survivor villains in terms of vileness? Now, when we go back in time to the, you know, you were considered to be a villain of Survivor, but you weren't doing anything really malicious while you were out there. What do you think of that term, Survivor villain?
Yeah, here you go, villains, and you're talking about vileness, et cetera. It's outside the game. It's just, it makes no sense to me. Even the Scott pouring water on the fire, that's not villainous or vile. That's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way my mind works. I just look at what people do in the context of being a good Survivor player. And so, villain, you know, I had that label, and still, I get, I don't know, for so long. And that's okay if people, viewers, fans of Survivor want to try and distinguish among somebody who doesn't play well and labels a villain as the guy who's willing to do anything within the context of the game, I'll take it.
Yeah. But
unfortunately, that's a different thing from what the word villain and being vile means to most people. And I don't think that these things that people do within the context of the game are villainous or vile. You know, pouring out the water, if I were to hold up that chicken and threaten its life in front of Ty, outside the game, that would be, gosh, that's the kind of heinousness and abuse of someone's feelings and emotions that's inhumane. But inside the game, it's delicious.
Yeah,
that's just awesome. Who thinks of that? Who can go there?
Yeah, that would be pretty villainous, that whole chicken hostage situation.
Right, outside the game. But in the game, that's good gameplay. Not many people would think to exploit it in a way that was so specifically helpful to get you to the end. I mean, if I could get that super idol from Ty by holding the chicken's neck in front of his head, getting ready to bite its throat out, imagine how people would appreciate my gameplay then.
Yeah, it would be huge. People would be talking about that. All right, speaking of Ty, Amy Shapiro wants to know, I am curious to hear what Rich thinks about Ty as a gay man who has had these bromances with Caleb and Scott. Rich won largely because he was able to make that bond with Rudy. Does he see that situation of Ty doing a good job with those relationships, or is it Scott, Caleb, and Jason who are doing a good job bonding with Ty? Did you have any thoughts on these relationships that Ty has had with a couple of these different guys this season?
Well, I didn't see any of the flirting that would make gay relevant. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that it was necessary or would have been helpful or whatever. But like Greg flirted with me.
Right.
I thought that was precious. I thought that was great. And it could have helped him, frankly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was necessary in this game. I don't think I don't think Scott or Jason or Caleb needed to playfully flirt with Ty. It was hysterical watching Ty try to, was it kiss Caleb? That was
that he was trying to kiss Beast Mode Cowboy Caleb. Yeah.
Yeah, that was hysterical.
But was that any game going on? Or to me, I felt like that was for camera time going on.
I think that was for Ty just being the playful, cute guy that he is, just kind of like, oh, well, I'm just too close to him to not do this. Giddy, giddy, giddy. But that's my point about Ty. I don't think he's clearly intentional enough about what he's doing, self-aware, reflective of how he's impacting other people. So I can't credit him with doing any of that to build bonds. He's just doing it unknowingly in that gentle soul kind of person he is. I love Ty, you know, as a person. And I think he's a wonderful human being. I think he's adorable. But that's a whole separate thing from whether or not you play Survivor well. I don't know that Jason or Scott are really even thinking much about who Ty is as a partner. They're keeping him. They're not offending him, I don't think. They're not doing anything much intentional to exploit Ty's weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. All right, Matthew Woe just wants to know, you've advocated that CBS should only cast people who understand the game. Is there a test CBS should give them to see if they really do know the game? Do you have any sort of litmus test that Survivor players should have to pass?
I do. Every damn one of them should be interviewed by me. There's my test.
So you want to go work in casting with Lynn?
How fun would that be for me? I would really enjoy doing that. But I have to caution. I have to clarify what you just said. You said that somebody was suggesting. I said every player should. I'm not saying that.
Most of them.
Every player should be. You know, something. I mean, if you didn't put a couple of Ding Dong Peters in there, you would really.
Boy, Peter really got on your bad side.
No. Again, it's not my bad side. You said this once before about somebody who was talking about, like, I'll give you a car. This is many, many seasons ago.
Yes.
And I remember you saying, oh, they you really just like them. No, it's not about that. He's just a doof from the Survivor gameplay perspective. Look, he might be a really lovely, competent, bright guy in his job and his life.
Yeah.
But as a Survivor game player, he was about as much of a ding-dong as you can be. So why not talk about it?
All right. Brad Craig has a pretty interesting question. What's the biggest thing Survivor is doing right in season 32 that they weren't doing in season 1? And vice versa, what's the biggest thing that they are doing wrong?
Oh, interesting question. I think they're doing a lot of things right. I don't know that they're doing many things wrong. The right is that they're getting, and I'm not sure it's always been easy. Well, I'm certain it's not been easy to do. They're getting more and more competent players with personalities so that they are interesting. I love that because it sets the viewers up for a dynamic that's enjoyable and unpredictable. And I love it. I don't know about doing things wrong. You know, we're really talking not about the Survivor CBS. We're talking about the casting professionals. We're talking about Lynn Spillman and her team. And I think she's done what I would describe as a really brilliant job of mixing the personalities. And that's clearly her job. So we're not too... We're not sitting here each season looking at this replication one after the other saying, oh, and here, and this one is that. Like you were saying, Rudy's kind of like Joe, right? Isn't that fascinating? Season 32, and we're going back to, he's kind of like this one in season one. So this is, there isn't this predictable pattern of boring personalities.
Yeah.
Lynn and her team have keep an interesting mix. And while doing so, are increasing the skill set of particular players. So you're bringing on more and more who seem to have an understanding of what it takes to play the game.
Yeah, I actually think that this season has been one of the best original casts that they've had. And I don't think that there's been somebody or if more than one or two people that would say, oh, that was a complete dud. What a miss on this person. I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, I do, too. What do you think would were Neil to have stayed in longer? That would have helped the dynamics. He'll come back, right?
I am. You know what? I think it's probably 50-50. You were a big Neil fan?
No, I don't know whether I was a big Neil fan or not, but I saw intention and I saw thoughtfulness that he shared with viewers.
See, I think he was a better player than he was casting because I think that he's probably just a little too nuanced as a person that I feel like his character didn't really come across on the screen.
Well, I agree with that. So he didn't have the dynamic personality, but what would have happened were he still in would have been interesting for me to have seen because people could have used his understanding of the game to make what unfolds interesting enough for me to watch. But that I think Yeah, I think you're right.
And I don't mean to knock. I'm not trying to knock Neil. I think if anything, I think he's almost like he's a very, very bright guy. But I feel like that I think that maybe somebody like a Beast Mode cowboy comes across as a better TV character because he's much more two dimensional than somebody like Neil. And I think that it's hard to really describe the character of Neil without using the words ice cream.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it's tough. I think that maybe the people that aren't necessarily going to be the best players. I think that if you are not really, you know, a big risk taker in terms of a strategist or in terms of how you play the game, I think that it makes it sort of a tough to come off on TV if you're more introspective.
Right. But if you're open enough with viewers about what's going on inside, then it can make for interesting TV when you see what that particular player, even if they're not a big character, has caused or inspired in other people. If Neil were clear enough with us about what he was going to do to have this happen or that happen, it'd be fun to watch that unfold.
Why? How do you think he was going to do? Do you feel like that he had a shot to go really far?
I feel like he had a shot to impact the game. Like he was smart enough that he wouldn't be making some of the stupid mistakes that I think Jason and Scott are doing, for example, to be so brash and silly, where he could be playing people. He would be maybe more aware of how Ty could be exploited in his favor. And it would be interesting to watch him try to exploit Ty. I'm so focused on Ty because I think that's kind of the crux of this game. Can you use people within the game of Survivor as pawns and help us see that that's going on as viewers? That's just lovely. To me.
Samantha Alexander wants to know, who on this season would you enjoy being on an All-Star Seasons with? Who do you feel like would be your biggest competition? Is there anybody that when you watch the show that you think about like, oh, I would love to play with this person, or I would hate to play against this person?
Well, great question. The idea of competition is so multi-layered, though. There are so many people who would be incredible competition, mostly because they aren't bright enough to keep me. They would want to or try to want to get me off early. And that's sad personally because I would want to win. But it's also sad because it wouldn't allow the game to unfold as excitingly as it would if there were a good player who would, like Aubrey, I think would be smart enough to keep me longer, to want me around. I don't think Scott would be. Jason might be. You know, Jason might understand that there's some real benefit here to aligning with somebody who understands this game as well as I do. See, what an ego I have, right?
Yeah. Well, we know this, so you're not surprising anybody. Now, I don't know how much you want to show your hands with this, but if you were on a season, you know, just like last season, there was a lot of stuff like with Steven. Oh, he's going out. He's looking for the idol. That's really going to make people feel like, oh, he's up to something. Would you be one of these people early looking for the idol, or would you be more likely to sort of like not want to get anybody any more of a reason to put a target on you?
Well, this is the key of winning. The key to being an effective player is flexibility. So it doesn't really even make a lot of sense for me to predict what I might do because I wouldn't know the personalities with whom I'm working or the situations. So as they unfolded, as I got to know the people and the situation, I would decide whether there was opportunity for me to look or for someone with whom I'd bonded because I trust that they're a good player to look, or, you know, there are all kinds of things that could happen, but I really couldn't say. It's not that I'm trying to play too close to my vest. I wouldn't know what I would do.
Yeah. Really, it's, you know, it's so tough for these people that have these big targets on their back. Are you better off to go out and find that idol, or even just like at least give people pause that maybe you do have the idol, because that opens up the door if people want to split the vote? You know, it's a very, very tricky question, which makes my job fun.
It is a tricky question, but it also what people don't talk about, and I haven't even heard you guys talk about it, is the idol itself is not everything people think it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
Even when you get it, you have to decide whether or not to expose it. You have to decide whether or not to use it. You could be sitting at tribal council scared out of your boots, and it would be a stupid move to use it, because as soon as you do, you've then exposed that you had it and hadn't told people. I mean, it's really a complicated choice. It's not just one simple, I got it, I won, I'm in perfect position. You know, that's so non-dimensional enough, one-dimensional.
That wasn't a Rupert voice, was it?
I don't know. That was my attempt at stupidity.
Joe Braga mentions that, Rich, you often talk about how the most important attribute in Survivor is flexibility, as you just did. Did Julia do a good job demonstrating this with her scheming with Jason, Scott, and Ty, or did she unnecessarily put a target on her back by raising paranoia against the other women in her alliance, which could have caused her to be voted out? So in terms of her being flexible, sure, she was flexible in terms of going back and forth. But if she didn't win immunity, she would have been voted out this week.
Well, great point, great question, all of it. But here's what it highlights. She was flexible, if we can use that word, because the word means a lot, enough to move when asked, is there anybody that wants to join the boys? But it's how you do it and what you do with your flexibility. So her having made that move requires that she make a series of additional other moves if her having made that move is to have been a good thing. If she doesn't make those series of additional moves, then all the things you just described are kind of the default position of the players. She's around. They're thinking, what's with her? She's not trustworthy. She's not, she didn't do that. I can't, you know, all of that. And it's about what she did or didn't do. Did she go to them and help them understand why she made the choice? We didn't see that. So it looks like maybe she didn't.
Hey, Billy Gross wants to know, you've been on Survivor, The Celebrity Apprentice, The Battle of the Network Reality Stars, and The Biggest Loser. What reality show do you want to conquer next? Is there anything that's on your bucket list, Rich?
Well, I've been asked to be on another one. I can't even talk about it yet because it hasn't been approved by the network, and it may not be. But is there something? You know, it's an interesting journey. I would never have predicted that I would be on multiple shows, but I think it's interesting that people see I am worthy of bringing something to whatever it is that they're inviting me to play or participate in. I love that. So I'll explore whatever somebody offers.
Yeah.
I don't know what's next. I have been offered another show, but
you're flexible.
I'm flexible. There you go.
You know, in case people didn't listen to the chat we did about The Biggest Loser back in, I think it was the end of January. How was that experience for you?
So The Biggest Loser was a really, really good thing for me. For me personally, it was a really great start. I lost 45 pounds, and that's exciting for me at this age. And it's healthy, and it was really motivating, and I've kept it off, and I'm still losing very, very slowly, which is making me really happy. I'm in a routine where I'm going to the gym every day, and I'm just in a good place. So The Biggest Loser was good for me. Like everything in which I'm involved, I saw so many ways in which the show itself, from a production standpoint, could be improved, and ways in which the contestants' experiences could be improved. There's no counseling piece, no mental health piece to The Biggest Loser. And that's just tragic, because the percentage of people who keep off the weight is drastically low. It's something like 11% of the players, 89% of them or something, gain back more than they started with. That's just so unnecessary. And if somebody could get on board early as a counselor and stay with them in the house, you know, on the ranch, through the show, helping them prepare themselves for when they leave, wow, I think those percentages would of success would increase drastically.
And your former boss, Donald Trump, hasn't reached out to you about a potential VP nomination, right?
Now, here's evidence of stupidity, right? He needs to help with his perspective among rational people. Never mind
yes.
the gay community. Why hasn't he called?
Yes, that would be
probably because I'm not really a supporter of his approach to this race at all.
But, you know, just again, just a recent, I thought you said something that was so interesting back when we talked about this, when we did that Biggest Loser podcast, that you actually feel like, you know, that that Donald Trump is a lot different than the Donald Trump that you used to know.
Well, yes, I think Donald Trump, the human being, is different from what you're seeing.
Yeah,
I think he has the wherewithal, the kind of intention to be a different person than who he actually is, because he feels the ends justifies the means. So I think he's exploiting his followers in order to get as far as he can get in this race. And I think his reasoning is that if he gets in, he'll do what's necessary to improve things for lots of people and for the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I don't think this kind of expediency and the way he's going about it is smart. I don't think it's justifiable. And I'm really off put by the ways in which his demeanor and the things he said is causing damage that it's unnecessary.
But as a guy, you liked him, right?
I did very, very, very much. He's very, very congenial. He's very friendly and connected. He's a good listener. There are many, many things about Donald Trump that I admire. He and I don't drink alcohol. He and I are, you know, similar in a lot of ways. But I'm not one to say things that I don't believe, because I believe I can do things better if I do get to some certain point. I'm more likely to say what I think and try and work through how that's difficult so that I don't cause people harm.
Adrian Dias wants to know, do you have any fun stories or anecdotes about Trump during your time on Celebrity Apprentice that we hadn't heard about?
Oh, there were lots of interactions there. I mean, the most fun story I have that people seem to get a kick out of is when I hosted Live with Regis.
Yes.
We did a little skit. So I rode the elevator in Trump Tower.
Yeah.
Up from the street right up to his tower, buck naked, walked into his office naked. And there I am, completely naked. He and I standing in his office as he walked me around the windows, pointing out the buildings he owned. I don't think there are too many people that can talk about that.
No, I don't think so. let's see. This is also from Matthew Wojcik. Do you get Chinese food on Friday nights? Jeff said that Chinese food is what he gets on Friday nights. Is that part of your Friday night ritual?
The Chinese food is not part of my ritual. In fact, my husband really, really dislikes American Chinese food. So I don't know if I've had Chinese food since I've been married more than 12 years.
Wow.
Actually, I have, but so rarely, and only when he's not around.
Wow. Well, you're such a good spouse, Rich.
I think I'm amazing. Does that shock you?
No. All right. Dan Connolly wants to know thoughts on Kelly Wigglesworth last season. We talked about this also on that Biggest Loser podcast. But, you know, sometimes people don't listen to all of the podcasts that we do, not during the Survivor season. Did you want to give just your quick take on how you thought Kelly did last season?
Well, you know, I'd like to give my long take.
I know you'd like to.
But I'll give you my quick take.
Appreciate it.
I think Kelly is not a good Survivor player. And when you talked about Neil just a few minutes ago,
yeah,
not being really a character that's worth, you know, much time on TV. I think
he's too complicated to come across on the TV show.
Oh, okay. So, well then, different from that, I'd say Kelly is not complicated, and it's very clear that she's not a character that's worthy of watching on TV. She didn't play well. She doesn't, she's not dynamic. She wasn't making moves that are sensible. She was a little too, not a little, she was a lot too in the background thinking things might be available to her that weren't. She's really just disappointing to watch for me.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are excited. There's so much nostalgia for the people from the early seasons.
Yeah, I understand the nostalgia, but if you look back at the seasons from one on, there are any number of players that you could look at and say, wow, I would really like to, you know, they made this move or they did that. It would be fascinating to see how they unfolded. And that has happened. Jervis, for example,
right,
was unable to build an alliance early because his team thought it was unethical. And by the time it was too late, he wanted to join my alliance. So it was nice to have an opportunity to see him play again and see what he could do or couldn't do with respect to moving farther in the game. There are lots of those people, but there are some, and for me, Kelly was one of them, who just didn't play very well for lots of reasons. And it was unnecessary for me to see her play again.
All right. Well, speaking of nostalgia for people from the early seasons, you definitely have expressed a desire here today to play again. Are you able, Mark Percy is asking, are you clear and free and clear to leave the U.S. and everything that it would take for you to play again?
Oh, I've long past having any kind of restrictions in any way, shape or form.
Okay, that's good.
I can travel anywhere, and it's not about wanting to play the game. I just love Survivor. The game is a good way, a good exposure of who we are. And I think I'm a really good player, and I love the game. So if asked, I would certainly consider it.
Okay. Yes. Oh, okay. So you would have to think about it.
Well, certainly. Yeah. No, you would too. There are lots of things in our lives now that would cause us to have to think about whether we would do it again, as much as we would enjoy doing it, playing well.
All right. Well, Rich, I really hope that we get to see it one of these days. I think that would be so fun.
I think so too.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about me playing. I'm talking about you playing.
Well, either of us. But imagine what we'll talk about after one of us does. It'll be great.
Yeah, I know. I'd have so much pressure, though, if I played again. And then if you said I did a bad job, it would really... It's like, oh, yeah. Because you would say, oh, that was so stupid. What were you thinking?
Yeah. If I saw something you did that was stupid, and I would damn well expect you to say the same to me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy. All right. Well, Rich, I really hope that we do get the chance to see it. I think it would be absolutely have to, and it would be a ratings winner.
I think so.
People would come back, people would watch that haven't watched Survivor in years, and I do hope we get to see it, because I think that you have not lost anything off the fastball. You know what you're talking about. You did a great job today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Always a pleasure, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
All right, Rich, I'm going to tell people, use the hashtag chicken hostage for Rich's plan to get the super idol away from Ty. Rich, are you still tweeting these days?
I am.
All right. Follow Richard Hatch on Twitter. He's at Hatch Richard on Twitter. And then what else are you working on these days?
Oh, you know, I'm working on my book. I'm doing all kinds of things. I'm volunteering at a group home as a counselor now. I'm thinking about teaching at a local university. I'm still in production on several shows that have not yet been picked up. So I've got a number of irons in the fire, but they're all good.
Yeah. Did you have a good time at the reality rally?
I always do. You know, it's such a great cause, and it really is rewarding to be able to do those kinds of things, you know.
Yeah. And also, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I'm 50 freaking five.
Wow. Okay.
Officially old, Rob. That's the number. Isn't that the number? Now I'm old?
No, I think 72 is the number. That's the Rudy and Joe era. All right. Well, Rich, thanks again. Greatly appreciate it. All the best. Okay.
Same to you, Rob. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye. All right, everybody. There you have it. That was Richard Hatch back here on the podcast again. So much fun to get Richard. And I thought he really did a strong job today. I really thought that he had a lot of good takes on the episode. And I hope you guys did, too. All right. So that's going to do it here for us today. Next podcast you're going to hear are the voicemails with Eric Stein. Going to get that up for you guys over the weekend. And again, I do apologize about not only did I screw up the Debbie exit interview, but everything being sort of a day behind. But it's just such a grueling schedule for me to go and go on the road and then do these live shows and then get all the podcasts out. And not to mention, we've got some family business taking care of between weddings and christenings and everything, but I'm trying to get it all in there for you. I'll be back home soon and we'll have a completely normal week coming up next week. So we'll get right back on track with that. Hopefully it wasn't too inconvenient for any of you guys. I am looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments and hope you enjoy the show. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.